I will call the meeting to order, and the first order of business is going to be House File 767, which was sent to this committee, but it has no fiscal note, so it should not have been sent to this committee. It's a policy bill related to Health and Human Services, or excuse me, Human Services long-term care, is that correct? And so I would move that House File 767 be recommended to pass and
General Register.
Rules.
And sent to rules. Mr. Morgan, do you have any comments?
It was a deadline mix-up, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the committee's time, and I know you have much more pressing things to move on to.
Mr. Chair.
So, Representative Abler.
Well, it never should have come in the first place. So it'll be kind of fun to hear the author talk about the content of the bill for a while. Just since he's all by himself there. Never mind, Mr. Chair. That's a good motion.
You're right, Representative Abler. We have nothing else to do today. Representative Liebling.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just want to say I know that Representative Morgan is fully capable of doing that, but we're going to spare ourselves.
So any further questions for Representative Morgan? I don't see any. All those in favor of the motion to send this bill to the Rules Committee, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So the bill is approved and sent to the Rules Committee. Thank you, Mr. Morgan, for your very concise presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And okay, do you want me to go down there? Yeah. Okay.
Okay, members, we're going to ask Representative Huntley, when he sits down and gets comfortable, to move House File 1233, and it will be recommended to pass and to be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And just before we get started, you all have been handed a packet with rubber band around it. And it's the A130408, and you have that before you. And so, Representative Huntley, would you move your bill, please?
Madam Chair, I would move that House File 1233, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And then, Madam Chair, I would like to move an amendment to the bill.
Yes, Representative Huntley. Again, members, you have the A130408, and Representative Huntley, is that the amendment you'd like to move?
Madam Chair, I would move the A130408 amendment, which is a delete everything amendment and gets the bill in the order in which we want it, and we'll discuss what's in the bill in a second or two after the amendment is hopefully adopted.
Madam Chair.
Wonderful. Representative Abler.
And this is a valid motion, but I just wanted to point out to members how long the title page is. The back page is like 1 2/3 pages long just for the title. So that's the kind of work we do here. So we'll discuss the rest of the bill later. We never discussed the title page. You know. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Abler. Any other questions? Does everybody have the amendment? Representative Grunhagen.
So these bill summaries of April 3rd for HF 23, that all this other information we have there, is that worthless?
Debris. Yeah, I would just set that aside. Representative Grunhagen will be starting with a new document, and I'm sure some new pages will be coming forward in the next day.
So that whole pile is?
Yeah. We have killed a lot of trees today and last week. So members, I think to point out some of the information in there will be relevant because some of the portions of the governor's bill obviously are in here, but it will be too difficult for you to try to use that document to to go back and forth.
For reference.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would like to thank the author for the delete all is actually shorter than the original bill, and I'd like that progress.
Wonderful. Any other questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A130408 delete all amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Great. The delete all is now the bill in front of us. And Representative Huntley, would you like to speak to your bill, please?
Well, Madam Chairman, the main thing I'm going to do is have Doug Berg go through the spreadsheet and explain what's in here, what's different from the governor's bill. There are certainly many changes, and you all know that we had a target of $150 million in cuts. This bill meets that target by a combination of cuts plus some raising of revenue. It's very complicated, and I last night was a typical night for our staff. I was home having dinner at 5:30 when I received a call from Lucy Morgan and Doug Berg about there was a problem with the bill, and we had to make some changes. And so Doug and Lucy were here most of the night getting these ready and getting them drafted. Took a lot of time. I'm absolutely amazed that we have them already. And so with that, I would love to turn it over. Actually, I'd love to turn it over to Doug Berg.
Thank you, Representative.
To present basically the spreadsheet so people can have a general idea of what's in the bill.
Thank you, Representative Huntley. And Mr. Berg, would you like to take it over and walk us through? And I believe you have handouts, members, long handouts that you can follow along.
Madam Chair and members, members should have a legal size document that is titled 2013 Session Budget Proposal Tracking, and the time and date on it should be today's date, 9:37 a.m. I don't know if that also went out to the audience or not, but it is posted on the House website as well. And I'll just, the first page, the only thing I will draw your attention to is orienting you to the sheet. The House columns are the left-hand six columns. And then, for comparison, the governor's supplemental numbers are in the center. As Representative Huntley noted, if you look on line 7 and over to the House numbers, you will see the 1415 number shows a negative $150 million, and in the 1617 number, it also shows a negative $150 million, showing that we hit our general fund target. There's other summary information there on page 1 and moving on to page 2, but I'm actually going to jump to the middle of page 2 where the initiatives start with Department of Human Services. I will say as a sort of a general matter on how the spreadsheet works that the House bill takes all of the ACA items of the governor and all of the savings items the governor had, as well as most or all of his mental health initiatives. And then I will try to kind of go relatively rapidly and note the differences. So if you see, starting on page 2, the Department of Human Services, we have the ACA changes there. The enrollment and eligibility in the pregnant women to and children to 275% of federal poverty level. Moving on to the top of page 3, we took the governor's item for emergency medical assistance coverage for cancer and dialysis patients. There is an item that is appearing in all the spreadsheets in the House bills this year, which is a base adjustment for the agencies to cover administrative costs at the agencies. This has not been done since 2007 and is just meant to acknowledge that over the last number of years, agency costs have been pared down to an untenable level, and this provides a modest bump on their base. The item below that is a mental health pilot project at the Zumbro Clinic. The item below that is the fetal alcohol syndrome prevention outreach program through Olmsted County. The item below that is Representative Fisher's bill to reduce
Madam
the
Chair.
We had wanted to go through the section and then come back for questions at the end of each section, Representative Quam.
Madam Chair, this one where he said it's adding back for the agencies since 07, what sort of, is it the same productivity as in 07, or is there any productivity calculation in there since this is pervasive across the entire agency bill?
Madam Chair, Representative Quam, the way this is calculated, you'll see that it is in the general fund and the health care access and the state government special revenue fund, lottery fund, wherever the various parts are funded. The way this is calculated is a 1% increase in each year on the salary base for the unit which is listed. Okay.
Representative Portman.
Mr. Berg, as you go through it, if you could refer to line numbers as often as possible, because it's very hard to follow.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Madam Chair, Representative Portman, I will try to remember that.
If you want to ask questions, please signal that you want to be, that you'd like to be put on the list. I will write you down, but we would like to get through the section and then come back if we could. Otherwise, we'll never get through the section. So that's how I'm going to proceed forward. I will take your names, so just signal to the staff or to me, and we'll add you to the list. Mr. Burke.
Madam Chair, members, and again, I'm now on the bottom of page 3. Actually, I haven't renumbered the sheet, so a number of these lines don't have numbers at this point, but on page 3, the second to the last item, which is titled Congregate Living Rates Modified for Homes with Mental Health Certification, is actually Representative Fisher's bill, but many members were interested. This reduces the reduction that occurred 2 years ago in congregate care low needs assessment. There, I think, was a general acknowledgement that the low needs assessment did not handle mental health issues well, and this would reduce that cut for congregate situations where they receive mental health certification. The last item on page 3 and running on to page 4 is limiting the statutory managed care organization trend caps in statute. The statute for managed care organizations includes a list of percentage increases that can happen to the trend line, the cost trend line for managed care organizations over time. There's language that will reduce those percentages, which produces a savings against the future costs for managed care contracts. Again, on page 4, the second item is Representative Loeffler's bill that's dealing with medical assistance eligibility for inmates in county jails and at the State Department of Corrections. You'll see that item adds to zero. What is going to happen is the cost, the medical assistance cost of those inmates will be picked up at DHS, and then there will be an intergovernmental transfer from the Department of Corrections to DHS to cover the cost, so there's a net zero at DHS. There will be savings, however, that accrue to both corrections and the counties.
Mr. Berg, Representative Huntley had a comment.
Just for the members, Madam Chair, you may remember right now people in the correction system are not eligible to be on medical assistance. Some of these people do get sent to a hospital because they need to be in a hospital. And while they're in the hospital, what this this part of the bill does is make them eligible to be on medical assistance, which means that medical assistance pays for their hospitalization. The correction department does not directly. So in the original bill, that was a cost to health and human services budget and a savings to the corrections department. And what this does, and one of the advantages to this, by the way, of course, the federal government pays 50% of the cost of their hospitalization. So what this does is transfer money from corrections to the health and human services budget so that we don't get stuck with the cost of that. And we're saving corrections money and let them pay for it.
Amen.
And as long as we're at a stopping place, Representative Abler, did you want to comment on this particular provision, or would you like to?
No, I can wait.
Okay, thank you. And members, you've just handed out the House research bill summary, which may help you follow along a little easier. Mr. Berg.
Madam Chair, members, moving on again on page 4, the next item is titled Network for Better Futures. We heard a presentation from them and a bill. There is $200,000 in here, and it is my understanding that Representative Clark's bill will also have some additional funding for that. Moving on, the next item is a repeal of the increase to the Teen Challenge program that was put in place last year. The next item after that is a repeal of the MFIP family cap, which was, I believe, Representative Fritz's bill. Members will note that the MFIP family cap is being increased with TANF funds, and there were no TANF funds to spend, but in this case we're cutting the support services grants in TANF that deal with job counseling and using that money in the cash grant line to repeal the MFIP family cap. The next item is titled MA Dental Services Expanded. This is Representative Norton's bill to add back sedation services in and home visits for MA Dental for disabled individuals. The next item after that on at the bottom of page 4 is the child care absent days. Representative Moran's bill, which returns the absent day number to 25 days. It was reduced to 10 days 2 years ago. At the bottom of page 4, we have two items that kind of parallel each other. Nursing homes, there is a 2% rate increase in the first year of the biennium, and there is below that a 2% increase for the home and community-based providers that were identified in Representative Newton's bill. Moving on to page 5 at the top, we have a change in critical access dental language. It actually, the title should be changed. It shouldn't have that and Merck on there. It's just critical access dental. This change would put in statute that only for a health network that has multiple clinics, only the clinics which have critical access patients that meet the threshold in statute would qualify for the payment, not all of their clinics, because one would qualify, and this has a savings. The next item after that is the ICFDD surcharge. This is actually a rate increase for ICFDD providers. Because of the federal match on that, there is some savings to the state, but the providers get a bump in their rate, and my understanding is the ICFDD providers are favor this increase. Below that is an item titled Hospital Surcharge. Many members will remember this has come up before. The governor proposed it in 2011. This increases the surcharge on hospitals in statute. You'll see there, which raises revenue. You'll see below that there are spending items which reflect raising the rate to the federal upper payment limit. And the net at the top is the increase that the state gets in revenue after paying the hospitals the UPL rate. Below that is an item which is called CAP HMO Reserves. This language would return the language in statute on risk-based capital to the 2004 level. That was what was put in place in 2004. After that, there was the cap was taken off on how much capital could be accumulated by HMOs. This returns it to the 2004 level, and it causes the HMOs to set up a special account which they control that the excess would be put into, and they would spend that down against their MA contracts and create a savings for both the state and federal government. The numbers you see on here represent DHS's current best guess of what the state share of that would be. The feds would get an equal savings. And these numbers probably will get refined some as DHS does more work on it. Moving on, in the middle of page 5, we have the governor's PMAP Merck investment. This returns it to the level it was in 2010. Below that, we did not take the governor's rate increase for targeted service categories in MA. The last three items on page 5, moving, that's lines 221 to the end of the page, are governor's items which save money. We took all of those. Moving on to page 6, we are taking the governor's 340B drug reimbursement program, and we are doing one of the governor's technology modernization projects. I should mention there are three listed under the governor's, one of which is related to the contingent appropriation spreadsheet I'll talk about at the end of this. The two others were in here. We're doing the one which is related to the exchange, but not the other one.
Representative Grunhagen, I will add you to the list.
Yeah, that's my understanding.
Okay. Madam Chair, moving on, the next initiative says Reform 2020, and it's the governor's intensive services for children with autism. Even though it's under the Reform 2020 banner, this is actually not one of the original Reform 2020 proposals of the governor, so it appears here, not on the Reform 2020 supplemental sheet, but we do have that item. On line 461, the governor's item for transition initiatives for certain populations, you'll remember this helps, is meant to help DHS transition people out of both the Security Hospital and Anoka Regional Treatment Center into community settings. We are keeping the language to do this, but we're going to start it in the next biennium because of cost reasons. We did not take the governor's nursing facility quality add-on on page four, line 475, since we upped the rate previously. We did take the last two items on page 6, our governor's savings items related to operating rate inflation and property rate inflation on nursing home facilities. Moving on to page 7, on line 488 and 496, we did not take the governor's spending items on the home and community-based services performance initiative or the management improvement initiative. The next two, the quality initiative starting on line 501 and line 508, both relate to the first relates to the MEDO settlement and training of staff in the use of restraints and isolation, appropriate use of restraints and isolation. The second item deals with training providers under the new 245D licensure, which appears later in the spreadsheet. We're doing both of these, but we did delay the effective date 1 year for cost purposes, so those will start in fiscal year 15. On lines 517 and 523 and 530 on page 7, those are governor's savings items, which we took just as the governor had them. Moving on to page 8, you'll see we did not take the three governor's spending items on lines 534, 540, and 547 relating to child care, the North Star Care Initiative, and the MFIP program. And we also did not take the parent outreach program on 565. The last three items on page 8, again, are governor's savings items that we do have in the bill, the EBT fee, the adoption caseload adjustment, and the supportive services expenditures match. On page 9, we did take the governor's expansion of the schooling's grants program on 581. This is part of the mental health initiatives. We did take the governor's initiative on 587 to establish a clinical care coordination benefit in MA. And on 593, you'll see they're both zeros. We do have the language in to establish a family psychoeducational benefit in MA. It's not a cost item, but it does appear on the spreadsheet as a no cost while we expand that, and it is in the bill. We have the governor's item on line 597 to expand mental health crisis response services. The governor's item on 601 on adjusting the adult rehab mental health services payment rate. The governor's item on 607 on mental health specialty treatment services, which again you'll see is a zero cost item. It's changing the expenditure of dedicated revenues, but adds to zero on the sheet. We did not take the the health workforce substance abuse screening, which is really a training program for workers. That was a cost item we did not take on line 612. We are taking the governor's items on line 616 on the elimination of the alternative to Moose Lake grant, 620, the one-time reduction in the chemical dependency treatment fund carry forward authority. Moving on to page 10, we are taking the governor's initiative on line 626 on mental health transition services. Again, you'll see this is a shuffle of funds internally at DHS involving receipts and dedicated receipts in their specialty healthcare services. It adds to zero, but it changes the way it's financed internally. The next three items on lines 6.35 and 6.39 are both savings items related to changing the county share of payments for the Anoka Regional Treatment Center and the Minnesota Security Hospital. This mirrors changes that were made 2 years ago on the county share and costs in the sex offender program. And then on line 643, we took the governor's item to fund projected growth in the sex offender program. Moving down the page on line 648, we have the new fee schedule for the HCBS providers that we've talked about. Again, the ACA item on 653 is in, and also the ACA... 653, I think I said for the HCBS, I think I said 653, but I meant 648. Moving down to 663, we did not take the two governor's items on child care licensing changes and the provider investigations and analytics. Moving on to page 11, on line 680, we took the item on expansion of internal audit capacity at DHS. Also on 685, the expansion of the surveillance and integrity review program through the Office of the OIG. On line 690, we took the governor's item to help increase MA provider recoveries. The 698 item on background study scope expanded. Do we include the language? Okay. I'm not sure if the language on the study scope is in or not. It is. As Aves tells me, that is. It's a no-cost item. And I believe the same is true of the background studies and access to MNCIS item as well. The language is in the bill. Moving on to line 708, the county performance management item the governor had, we did not take that spending item. On 714, we are doing the same, adjusting the transfers between the healthcare access fund and the general fund. This has to do with cash flow and the healthcare access fund. We're doing that as well. At the bottom of page 11 on line 720, we have the item on strengthening newborn screening. This is related to the health department's newborn screening initiative, but this is the DHS piece of that. Moving on to page 12, on line 724, this is the ACA New Minnesota Care Initiative. There is in the bill language that has been developed between the governor's office and the legislative staff have tried to work through getting the language the same. DHS has costed it out and said it is, as far as they can tell in a quick analysis, looks the same as the governor's initiative, and so the cost items are the same, and that's the way we're carrying it at this point. The ACA administrative item on 739, we have the same as the governor, as well as the ACA Excuse me. We did shave one item on the ACA. The only change we made to ACA is on line 746, the ACA appeals item. There was some thought that the appeals would probably ramp up, and we don't really know how many appeals would happen, and so the number of appeals personnel at DHS was reduced in half in the first year and then straight-lined out so that the legislature could get a gauge of how many appeals actually were happening under the new ACA and how many new staff might be needed. Line 751 is, again, the part of the ACA and Minnesota Care Exchange interface, the governor's item that we took. We also took the governor's mental health care in treatment in foster care item on 757, which saves money. The item on MA coverage of electronic tablets as communication devices on 761 also saves a small amount of money. On line 765 is the Wilmer community-based health hospital, which was scheduled to close. DHS and the governor agree that it should stay open now, and we have that item again. That nets to zero, but it anticipates that it will generate enough revenue in the state-operated services, especially health care area, to pay for itself. Moving on to page 13. At the top of the page on line 770 is an estimate for savings in the MFIP child care program based on the governor's all-day kindergarten initiative. I will say I've contacted DHS. The House may have a more robust all-day kindergarten initiative than the governor did, which might alter these numbers as the two bills move forward. On line 774 is the FAME program, which the governor restored, and we have as well. On line 778, we did not take the governor's homeless prevention program. However, Representative Clark's housing bill does have funding for several homeless and emergency homelessness and runaway youth programs that the base of the program is in DHS, but Representative Clark is funding some increase to the base in her bill. On line 784 is the repeal of the last 6 months of the 1.67% cut to long-term care providers. The item that is just below 791 and the numbered line is the governor funds part of his MA initiative and Minnesota Care initiative by transferring the cost of some MA populations to the Healthcare Access Fund, because under the new structure with more MA and a different Minnesota Care or BHP plan, the Healthcare Access Fund has lower costs and MA has higher costs. So the governor put some of those costs onto the MA populations onto Healthcare Access. For the tails in this bill, we do more of that. We do the governor's and we do more of it in the tails. So it makes the Healthcare Access Fund, which has a substantial balance in 16 and 17, pay for part of the costs of MA populations in those years. On line 798, there's a transfer the governor did from the general fund to the Healthcare Access Fund for cash flow purposes. The House bill transfers it back to the general fund in fiscal 15. The health department is next on page 1115.
Mr. Berg, if we could, we were going to take it in parts. If we could, there were a couple people that had lined up for questions in the top portion before we go to the Department of Health. I'd like to get those answered if we could quickly. And Representative Huntley, did you want to comment?
Just a comment. One thing we did not talk about is sex trafficking. And there, if I understand it's right, that's not in this bill. Representative Clark did put some housing in her bill. And my understanding from leadership is that Representative Kamar will put some of the police training to deal with sexual trafficking. I'm shaking my head there.
It's possible.
Possible, yeah. So we're working on that to normally this department, this bill would not pay for training for police officers, so we're trying to get it there, and hopefully that will happen. For me, a very important issue, and the cop training is very important. There is strong support for this particular measure dealing with sexual trafficking from the police departments around the state. They are really behind this, and this would help them start to deal with that.
I think Representative Huntley points out something that many of us have been watching, is that we heard lots of wonderful bills in this committee this year, things we felt very strongly about, but because we had such a horrible budget target, we've been blessed with other committees being willing to pick up some of the issues that normally we would have just included in this bill as appropriate. And so, as you mentioned, housing is one of them. I believe there's some bonding provisions that Representative Clark is working with Representative Hausman on for some bonding authority, too. So we'll see little bits and pieces of that bill and probably a few others showing up in some of the other bills, and we'll have to coordinate that and watch it carefully. I have Representative Abler and Grunhagen on the list, and then if others, before we go to the Department of Health's portion, if you have questions or clarifications you need, you could ask them now. Representative Abler.
Well, I'll just ask. I'll defer to the end of the whole presentation. Just react to everything.
All right, Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Huntley, on page 5, there's that hospital surcharge. Are we going to discuss that further, or is this the only time to discuss the surcharge?
Well, we will certainly discuss it today. This is a very controversial issue, as we all know, and it's one of the big items that we did to adjust our deficit. And what this does is capture, again, federal money, which we use. The unfortunate and very controversial part of this section, and I'm not going to mince any words here, is that the hospitals get paid back for what they put into this. Unfortunately, they don't get paid back in the same way that they paid in. So some hospitals that have high medical assistance rates come out very well by doing this. Some hospitals that do not have high medical assistance rates are losers. So it is controversial. We have done this in the past, but I think members need to know that this is one where there's winners and losers.
And Representative Huntley, thank you for clarifying that. And I think we just mentioned to the committee kind of lay out the week. We are going to be in this room or another room meeting for the whole week. We will be taking testimony and discussing the components, just as you're raising. There are some controversial components in here, and frankly, members may have different priorities that aren't reflected here that they'll want to talk about. So we'll be taking testimony from folks in the room and outside the room and hearing from members tomorrow and Thursday, and then Thursday amendments need to be completed by 10 a.m., and then Friday the bill will be open for amendment. And so we encourage you to be talking and thinking and listening and then preparing amendments for Friday. So that's how we're proceeding. Representative Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. So is this the time to ask a few additional questions about this item?
I think if you want clarification, you could ask Representative Huntley. Otherwise, some of these questions, Representative Grunhagen, may be asked of people testifying in the next few days, too, so you'll have that opportunity as well.
Okay, just one quick additional question, Madam Chair. Thank you for that input, and I'll try and make it brief. Is the and then I have a couple other follow-up just questions on other items. Is there a sunset provision on that surcharge, Chair Huntley?
Representative Huntley.
No, there is not.
Okay.
Representative Grunhagen, you had a couple other clarifications?
Yeah, just the next item there, cap HMO reserves.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a limit to their losses in a particular year?
Representative Huntley.
What this bill does is go back to the reserve corridor that we had from, I think, the mid-'80s up to about 2003. In 2004, the reserves were changed, and it allowed them to have much higher reserves.
Yep.
I think that things worked very well up to 2003, and so what this bill does is say that they must reserve or reduce their reserves, and what they have to do with those reserves is help pay for, they have to spend down. Now, most of the HMOs, and this is just this section just applies to HMOs, does not apply to the indemnity health insurance.
Yep.
Most of the HMO money, not all, but most of it is strictly from public programs. And but what we're saying in here is, but some of the HMOs also have corporations that are buying their insurance through that. And what we're saying is when they keep these reserves, but what they have to do to get them down to where we would have had them in the 2003 time frame is they have to return that money to who's ever paying them. So if it's a private company, then the private company gets basically a reduction in their premiums. If it's MA or Minnesota Care, we're saying if that's where the money came from, that the HMOs must use that to pay MA or Minnesota Care rates.
Oh. And Representative Grunhagen, if you've got a follow-up, we've got three other people too. So
okay, real quickly. Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Hundley, is there a limit to their losses in this bill at all? In other words, you know, we're limiting their reserves. They're required by law to do this. What if they have an exceedingly bad year, a lot of overusage? Is there a limit to their losses on this?
There is, Madam Chair and Representative Grunhagen, there is no limit to their losses. We are going back to what we had up to 2003, which said, I believe, that they had to have 3 months of potential expenses in their reserve account.
Okay,
so that's what we're going back to.
Representative Grunhagen.
Hey, thank you, Madam Chair. Then on page 11, MA Provider Recoveries, is that Inspector Kerber's department?
Representative Huntley.
Madam Chair and Representative Grunhagen, yes, that is Inspector General Grunhagen's. Inspector General.
Thank you for the promotion. Without pay, by the way. No. So we're expanding that program, Madam Chair.
Representative Huntley.
I'm looking for what line is that?
It's line 691.
Yeah. All we're doing there is this is what the governor proposed. We're adapting what the governor has proposed. And this is savings that Mr. Kerber thinks they will get by going after fraud and abuse within the medical assistance program.
Yeah, and he's done.
Representative Grunhagen, I think this book that we just handed out will help somewhat, and I also believe, you know, staff's going to walk through some of this with you in just a few moments when we get through the overview.
One teeny little question yet, Madam Chair?
Oh, okay, Representative Green. Just teeny. We're going to count.
You're very gracious, okay? There's been published reports, Chair Huntley, that the governor and Commissioner Jessen is taking a new approach to paying medical assistance that's supposed to save $90 million. Is that booked in this bill?
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Berg.
Madam Chair, Representative Grunhagen, I think when you say that, what you are referring to is in the governor's original budget, there was savings related to HMO contracts based on continuation of the bidding process, the open bidding process. Those savings were actually realized in the state budget in the February forecast. So the state's actually already booked the savings from that, and they no longer show up in the spreadsheet. I think that's what you're referring to.
I'm done, Madam Chair. I'll ask.
Thank you. We're glad you asked those questions. Representative Abler deferred, but he'd like to make his comments, and then I have Representative Mack and McDonald yet.
Well, thank you. And I was going to wait, but we got talking about stuff, so I think it's better to segment human services, and I think the Department of Health stuff is a little less controversial. And Part of my questions are just a request for more discussion about some of the elements of this, independent of testimony. We're going to hear about some of these in testimony. And so over the course, maybe today if there's yet time to go back on some of these things, to look into the hospital surcharges and in some detail, what rate was it, and eventually there'll be a run on the winners and losers. And I understand the challenge Upson Huntley had to make this budget work, and I'm sympathetic. I'm not happy with all the choices he made, frankly, but we'll talk about those. And I'm happy the DD providers are not so unhappy with their thing. On the nursing home rates, I'd like a similar discussion about that. It looks like we took the governor's reduction of property rates and gave back a portion of that in a COLA. I'd like some detail about that as we go on. On the HMOs, where we cap their rates, and I'm not disagreeable about that. I looked into that in 2011, and for some reason I was talked out of it. It is one-time money, and so it puts a burden on the tails, and it may or may be problematic, but I'm just curious about the run on that, and I'm sure there'll be testimony from multiple groups on that one. They may all come on their own on that one. And the MCO trend caps, I would like to talk about that more later. That's on page 3. I think those are existing contracts, and there's some additional savings that's being squeezed out of there, which is Representative Grunhagen's question, I think. We have $21 million. I'm also extremely interested and worried about the rate-setting piece of the bill, which I don't know what the current language is, and the licensing. These are really important, necessary things to do, but they can be done well, and they can be done unwell. I hope that this committee will choose to push the department to err on the side of the provider so they can stay open. The opening offer was 5% reduction, plus or minus, in the first year. That was last year's bill, I think. They've realized that that was a terrible idea, and they're back to, I think, 1%. And so that'll be some discussion now, hopefully, with Representative Norton and I. We can come to an agreement before we get to the markup. But they are grievously at risk, the providers are. With some of these changes, if we do it badly, if like the department wants and do it right away, we will see places closing that were really well run, and that's we don't want that. I'd like to talk about that. And Representative Huntley, I'm surprised you went after the healthcare access fund for $460 million to pay for the medical assistance expansion that we all thought was so great. And we can talk about that. Do you want to react to that? Mr. Representative
Huntley. I've been a very strong, Madam Chair, and Representative Abler, very strong supporter of protecting the health care access fund and not using it in general for general fund expenses. But what we're talking about with this bill is the same people that are currently either on Minnesota Care or eligible for Minnesota Care. And some of that group will be in medical assistance, and I don't mind paying using healthcare access fund to pay for the same people we're already paying for on Minnesota Care. And so if they've shifted to MA, at least the feds are going to pay half, and we'll only have to pay half. So I think it's basically the same group of people, so I'm not opposed to that transfer. If you wanted me to take healthcare access fund to pay for somebody that's at 75% of poverty, I would not support that.
Thanks, Madam Chair.
Representative.
I know your feelings about that, and I we can discuss that more. I just thought it was a big bite. The governor didn't do it. And so maybe you thought of something they didn't, but that'll certainly be interesting to a lot of the people. So we can discuss it more. I just was surprised to see that. There was ongoing concern about the 340B drug charge changes, and I was absent that day in testimony, but I've heard quite a bit from the pharmacies about some of that, and we keep nicking away at what we pay for pharmacy, and we're not going to have any Minnesota-based Medicaid pharmacies pretty soon, so I'm just expressing my concern about that. And I think that we probably shouldn't do that somehow or other. And I still have two more, but I thought I'd give you the list. And so
continue, Representative.
Thanks. And Mr. Chair, I hope that the reduction of teen challenge wasn't anything except a monetary choice. We agreed on that on a bipartisan basis last year. That is one of the most effective programs to take kids at the end of the at the end of the pipeline, one person there has been through 19 drug times. But we spent happily out of our chemical dependency fund, and we would pay more. And some of these kids actually get done. So I hope there's a way to replenish that, because that is, you know, there is a, you know, a spiritual piece to that. But they absolutely get better. They have a, and we, I won't discuss that now, but they, I think they'll be pretty surprised about that.
And Representative Huntley, I don't believe it's just not increasing it. It's not. Is that, I understand that, Representative
Huntley? Stopping, Madam Chair, it's stopping the increase, and I think I was the one that had the bill that got him the increase, so this is one of the painful ones for Tom Huntley that I put in there.
Yeah. So it's not cut to the base.
And I would also say, on the 340B thing, that there's like 100 different groups that interact with the state with the 340B program, and each one has an individual contract that is different, and it's a very difficult mess for the department to have to deal with that, and I do certainly believe that we need some reform of the 340B system, so it's at least much easier to administer, and that all the groups that are getting money through it get basically the same treatment.
Thanks.
Representative Abler?
And Madam Chair, Representative Huntley, I'll continue to work with you on the process here. I just hope to everything that the governor doesn't accept your target, and that some of these choices that are merely math choices can be dealt with in a different way. And the last thing, which I think is something you want to consider looking at as well, is I support the family cap repeal, but I think taking away the job supports might be not the way to get the money, even though it's TANF. And at some point, I'd like to hear from, you know, my own job, Anoka County's job, really good job center, and see if this is going to undo what they can do to get people actually working. So, Madam Chair, there's a lot of more discussion to have. I thought I would be productive for the chair and members to know where my highlighted concerns are, and I'm committed to be part of this process to get a bill that works. And that, but I want to also point out that a lot of things that we did in 2011. Have not been undone, and the rate improvement on that one area, we didn't want to cut that rate anyway. That we didn't know it would be done so ham-handedly as to cause some of the harm that happened there. That low needs thing, and who knew that the mental health was so underrepresented in the tools they were using, and so that was an unintended consequence. And the 1.67% rate cut was supposed to be long fixed by now, with the waiver that was almost sure to come, and so I appreciate the representative fixing those two clinkers. But I'm also happy that a lot of the reforms that were done in 2011 are left intact by the governor and the House, because they were solid, good reforms that were provoked by people digging in and finding new ways to do services. So maybe we can do some of that same thing in this bill, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Abler, and I hope we can have that kind of bipartisan support for whatever we come out with this year. Representative Mack, and then Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've actually had time to kind of find the answer to my question, and it was just with some details about the surcharge, Chair Huntley. And so if anyone's looking, it's on 151 of the bill. But it explains that the increase will go to 2.63% of revenues from hospitals. And then I found that the payback will be 30%. Is that accurate to hospitals, what they'll see? And so I guess my question to Representative Huntley is, is it your, and I'm sure we'll hear from testifiers, will that make, I'm just trying to figure this out, will that make the hospital community whole at the end of the day? And then my follow-up question to that is, and I was trying to just do a little research on the history of the surcharge, is there a place that the department has on what that surcharge is specifically used for, how that money has been used in the past? Is there a way for committee members to know that?
Representative Huntley.
Madam Chair, I would refer to Mr. Berg to give the precise number that has gone up, and so Mr. Berg, if you would.
Mr. Berg.
Madam Chair, Representative Mack, I think if I would correct one thing, then there are going to be a substantial number of revisions that we just got the bill this morning, and so there are going to be a substantial number of errors and revisions in author's amendment on Friday. I believe, I didn't bring my sheet down, but I believe the correct number for the cap is actually to 2.68% is the number that will appear in statute rather than the one that's in the draft right now. The upper payment limit, the rate under MA that gets increased is 30%, and that's the information that I have from the department on how much we can increase the MA rate to get to the maximum limit you can go to under federal law, which changes from year to year. There's a thing called the upper payment limit, the UPL. This bill anticipates we up the surcharge, then we up the rate to the federal maximum. That doesn't pay every hospital back individually the amount they would put into the surcharge. It varies greatly based on how much their MA business is. The surcharge is based on their total book of business, but the payback is based on an increase on the rate on their MA business. So no individual hospitals won't get paid back all of their money.
Representative Mack, as someone who represents the Mayo Clinic down in Rochester, we are very concerned about this provision because they are one of those that will be inordinately affected, and I'm hearing that there will be a few others that, and we'll hear that in the next few days.
Sure,
and
Madam
and
Chair,
Representative Huntley wanted to finish, I think, answering, and then we'll get back to your question. Representative Huntley?
I would certainly agree with the Chair that the Mayo Clinic gets a big hit on this, and they bring in people in from all over the country, and they have to pay for that, even though they're not Minnesota residents that they're treating. So that is a controversial issue. And Mr. Berg, but am I correct that basically 100% of what we, the surcharge raises from the hospital will go back to some hospital? It might not be the one that paid the amount, but the dollar amount.
Mr. Berg?
Madam Chair, no. I mean, we are, there is a revenue raising for the state that helps us build, make our balance in this bill. I mean, but it will, there is a net benefit to the state, if you want to look at it that way.
But
Representative Huntley.
Madam Chair and Mr. Berg, but doesn't most of that net revenue to the state come from the federal contribution?
Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chair, no, I don't believe that's the case. This will raise a surcharge on the hospital's book of business. We will raise the maximum payment rate to the hospitals under MA to a 30% increase. Under the maximum payment, the state will have to pay a certain amount, and the feds will pay an equal amount, and it is not quite, let me, just one moment, Madam Chair, it would be 5598, Madam Chair, Representative Huntley, it's not quite a full payback, it gets close, but it's not quite a full payback with the federal side in it.
And Representative Mack, did you want to?
Maybe just a clarifying question at that point. To Mr. Berg, if I understand the upper payment limit, does that mean that if we up to 30% payback to the hospitals, will that be matched dollar for dollar by the federal government in MA funds? And so we're just going to the point at which it's a dollar for dollar match. If we were to go higher than that, when the state's putting in more than what the feds would match. Am I understanding what you're saying on that particular point, why 30% is the chosen number there?
Madam Chair, Representative Mack, the upper payment limit is a limit established in federal law on how high the rate can be. We cannot exceed that under federal law. So of the rate increase under most circumstances, the feds pay half and we pay half. That's what would happen in the rate increase. There are some places where the split is different, but generally that's what would happen. But we can't exceed the cap.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And
Representative Mack?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just one last comment, I guess. My initial impression, and so maybe clarity over the next couple of days, was what Representative Huntley was originally speaking to, was that at the end of the day, there would be winners and losers in the hospital community, but the community as a whole would be made whole. At the end of the day, what was paid in would be redistributed in full back. So if there's any clarity available in terms of what that discrepancy will be, or maybe testifiers, and if there's a way, if it's maybe Representative Huntley's goal, or was his goal in drafting this, to remedy that, be very interested to know if that's even possible and still fall under the federal guidelines and everything else. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Looks like Mr. Berg has another clarification.
Madam Chair, it looks to me in very quick calculation that if you add the federal side on to what our payback is in the first year, the revenue would exceed the total payback by about $6 million. Part of the problem is that in at least one case, if you look at it, the adults without kids, you see there's not a payback number in 2015. That's because we actually, under the calculation, we hit the upper payment limit in 2014, and we can't go any higher the next year there, so there we can't pay them back the additional money in the next year on that one. So it gets close to it with the federal money, but not quite all the way.
Okay. Thank you, Madam
Chair.
Thank
you. Representative McDonald, and then Grunhagen.
Madam Chair, thank you. I was just wondering if Chair Huntley would consider extending the deadline. You said, what, Thursday at 10 a.m.? Thought with the scope of the bill and some of the other committees that we're on that are doing the same thing, that maybe several hours, maybe later in the afternoon, if you'd be willing to extend that deadline for our amendments.
Representative Huntley's been pretty firm on this up to now. Representative Huntley?
Madam Chair and Representative McDonald, I would like to have them in on time. It's a very complicated issue, and I would also say that if you were submitting amendments that cost money, you better have in the amendment something that says where the money's coming from, or it will be ruled out of order.
Thank you. And we do have 2 days, so we need to keep this bill in front of us and do some reading, I think, between now and Thursday morning at 10 a.m.
Madam Chair.
Representative Huntley.
If I could just, one of the things, you know, and I don't like the hospital surcharge. It's something I think that I have to do, or we have to do. But you need to look at this in the perspective of what everything else that's going on. And with the medical assistance expansion that we're talking about, there's about $1.7 additional billion dollars from the feds coming in this biennium, $2.4 billion in the next biennium to our health care providers. In the first biennium, about $300 million of that is going to hospitals. And in fact, the numbers we've gotten from the Department of Health that the uncompensated care that hospitals currently must pay for, or somebody pays for, should be reduced because of what we're doing by about $170 million. So there are other things going on with hospitals at the same time. Some of them are very good, and this particular one for some hospitals is not so good.
And Representative Huntley, we're going to take one more question from members, and then we're going to let Mr. Berg go through the Department of Health, and then we'll come back at 2:15, just as a heads up. I did just want to say the point that you just made, Representative Huntley, about there are other aspects of the bill with the growth of MA, still only helps hospitals that have patients in MA. So we may be negatively affecting, again, the same hospitals twice with both of those actions. So we'll just have to watch that as we move ahead. Representative Grunhagen, quickly, and then we're going to do the Department of Health portion.
My understanding is if the state payback, you know, if they take $100 million out of the hospitals through this tax or whatever they take back, if they pay back 50%, then with the 50% match from the feds, it should be made whole. But, I mean, it's unequal to the different hospitals. But, and my understanding is that we're at a 50% payout, or is that incorrect, Mr. Berg?
Mr. Berg.
Madam Chair, Representative Grunhagen, yeah, that's basically right. I was just saying, in the case of MA, usually it's 50-50. There are some cases where it's not, but here. And you're right that the issue is primarily, but not exclusively, who gets what in this. Different hospitals will pay, and different hospitals will get different amounts back. But also, the total payback doesn't quite equal what would be the revenue, because there are problems where we bump into the upper payment limit and we can't legally pay back that much. So that's part of it. So not 100% of it gets paid back, and it definitely does not get paid back to the same people who generate it.
Okay. Members, if you turn to page 13 of 18 on your form, the Department of Health portion is there. And I don't think anyone, I'm just trying to move along so we can get this through. There will be lots of time for discussion in the next days, so please be thinking, and we'll get your names on the list and all your questions answered, as well as testimony. So I hope you aren't feeling too terribly rushed today, because we've got time ahead. Mr. Burke.
Madam Chair, the Health Department and the boards will go quickly. Just one note on a slight correction. Representative Abler had made reference to the shifting of MA populations to health care access and said the governor doesn't do this. The governor actually does quite a bit of it in his Minnesota Care Initiative. We just do more of it in the tails. So it is in there is shifting of MA populations to health care access in the governor's initiative on the top of page 12.
Thank you.
Moving to the bottom of page 13, the Health Department. The first set of items, increased core public health activities, is the governor's general fund initiative. The House took that in total. Below that is an item called MERC, which is an addition out of the healthcare access fund that is funding replacing a carve out of additional MERC funds in statute that was repealed 2 years ago, I believe. There's some discussion at the staff of whether there's language now transferring this to the MERC fund in statute. We weren't exactly sure whether to carry this at the health department or in the DHS portion, but for now it's in health, and there is transfer language in the bill that allows the money to get transferred to the MERC fund. At the top of page 14, there are just a few additional things at health that are different from the governor. The first item on 14, the nurse staffing study, this is Representative Atkins' bill, which at this point is a study of nurse staffing levels. And this bill contains the cost of that study. The next three items, this is the base adjustment. This is analogous to the base adjustment at DHS. It's carried in three items just on the three separate funds here, because I had a spreadsheet issue when I put it in and had to do it as three items rather than one, but it's the same thing that you saw at DHS. It represents 1% each year of the salary base of each of the lines that are represented in each of the funds that are represented. And other than that, there are no changes at the health department. The spreadsheet runs on to a number of pages of stuff that are not in this committee's purview at the health department, that are over in the environment committee. And just to finish up quickly, moving to page 16, where the health-related boards start, you will see in each of the boards a small increase in the state government special revenue fund. These again represent the 1% each year based on their salary base in the state government special revenue fund. On page 17, there the only change other than that at the boards is on line 1262. Representative Huntley has a bill which last year we did a study of ambulance uncompensated care, which was run through the Board of Nursing Home Administrators. It was a $10,000 one-time item. The bill didn't contain language saying it was one-time, so it was booked in the state general fund as a permanent item. Representative Huntley's bill just clarifies last year's bill to say it's one-time, so you see we have a $20,000 savings from just changing the last year's statute to clarify that. Again, the rest of page 17 and going on to page 18 are the 1% increase on the board's base. That carries over into the Emergency Medical Services Board and the Ombudsman for Mental Health in the general fund. Those are the 1% base increase based on their salary. The same is true with the Ombudsman for Families and the Disability Council, and then members will remember that the governor had very small initiatives at a staff position at the Ombudsman for Families and an emergency preparedness item at the Disability Council that are covered. And that's the main spreadsheet. And, Madam Chair, I can just very briefly, there is a supplemental spreadsheet that members have that is letter-sized. It is titled, in the upper right-hand corner, it is titled 2013 HHS Tracking, House File 1233, 2020 Supplemental. And what this does is it takes the entire governor's 2020 reform initiative and pulls it out of the main spreadsheet and puts it into a contingent funding article. All of this, you'll remember, was contingent on our receiving a waiver from the federal government, both the changes in spending, the savings and the changes in spending. This pulls it all out and puts it in separately. If you look at the top, you'll notice that it has zero net fiscal impact. Whether we spend the money as it is in the main funding article or it gets triggered in the contingent article, the amount of spending is identical, so the contingent spending doesn't add any new spending. It just would change where some things happen. There are savings in the out years if the contingency is activated. It does save almost $60 million in the out years, but that is only in the event that we get the waiver. Other than that, this sheet, the items for 2020 are exactly as they appeared in the governor's budget. They're just pulled out to be make it clear they're totally contingent.
And Mr. Berg, might I ask, and I don't know if this question could go to Representative Huntley, or if you know the answer, when do they anticipate getting a response? Was there a deadline?
Madam Chair, there just usually is not an answer to that with federal waivers. We can ask the department, but I've never found that there's any kind of timeline that you can count on with.
There's usually a deadline to have the application in, but when they actually release the money is open-ended. Okay.
That's correct, Madam
Thank
Chair.
You. Representative Huntley, how would you like to proceed at this point? Are there questions anyone has on the Department of Health? Maybe we should go to that first. Representative Abler.
Thanks. And you said we're coming back at 2:15?
2:15.
For more of this discussion.
For more fun in Health and Human Services.
Yeah, exactly. This is like... Yeah.
I'm just instructed, Representative Abler, that the staff will walk through the language for us.
Oh, thank you.
Of the actual bill.
That would be very good.
Okay.
Just a comment about actually the base adjustment. We talked about this in Ways and Means and how you're going to pay for the increases of the contracts that we've been ratifying. So I think it's a reasonable thing to acknowledge that. Otherwise, what we're saying is that the departments have to, again, manage within the appropriation and give raises, so I have to leave vacancies open. So I think that's a productive thing. I have a question for Representative Huntley. On the board allowances, we did the 1%. You did. This is actually still you did this, but anyway, the Huntley bill. But you provided 1% to the boards for their salary packages. The EMSRB is the exception, wanted some money from the general fund, which is problematic, just given your target. But the rest of the boards had a request for some appropriation increases for varying worthy projects. And I have a bill about that. Are you open to that, entertaining that? It'd be special revenue fund with no general fund impact. Is that something I should pursue?
Madam Chair and Representative Abler, I'm certainly happy to discuss that with you. I'm obviously most interested in the general fund, and the special revenue funds should be designed to cover the costs of operating that board. That's the only thing I would say. And if we want them to do something extra, then we should pay for it.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I shouldn't say we should pay for it.
Yeah, they should.
The people that get licensed would have to pay for it.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Huntley. Right now, I think we're gonna pause. I need someone that has looked over the minutes to move them for me. I have two sets of minutes, one for April 5th and one for April 4th. Has anyone had an opportunity to look at those and would be willing to move them, please?
Madam Chair, I'll move the minutes.
Thank you. Representative Schumacher moves the minutes of April 4th and April 5th.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Anyone have any questions about either of those? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Any opposed? We've approved the minutes. Members, just as a reminder, we're recessing now until 2:15 in room 5. All right? 2:15 in room 5. We'll see you then. We're into recess.
All right.
We're going to call the meeting to order. We're returning from recess to take up House File 1233 again. I think as we're going to proceed, Representative Huntley, I think it's to have the staff walk through the language. But if you'd like to introduce the staff.
That would be correct, Madam Chair. We finished going through the initial part of the spreadsheet and the finances, and obviously Mr. Reard will be around here wherever he is for the next 3 to 4 days, so we can ask further questions of him at that time. But now I'd just like to have the staff start going through the language of the articles. And I think they know the order they're supposed to be in. Like we're starting out with Mr. Chun.
Right. Sure. So, members, you need the big packet, the delete all that you have from this morning. That might be the easiest, and there's also the research summary that House handed out as well. So, Mr. Chun.
Sure. Madam Chair, members, we'll start with Article 1. This is the Affordable Care Act implementation article. This article contains nearly all of the sections from Article 1 of the Governor's Bill. This article also contains a number of provisions from House File 214, Representative Murphy. This is the bill dealing with Minnesota Care and the Basic Health Plan. In the interest of time, I guess I won't go over every section. I'll sort of point out the more significant provisions from the Governor's Bill and also point out what has been added to that language. Section 1 is from House File 214. This requires federal funding that's received to operate a basic health plan to be deposited into the Health Care Access Fund and also dedicates this money to the Minnesota Care program. Mm-hmm. Section 3 is from the Governor's Bill. This requires DHS to seek federal authority and federal funding to operate a health care program for persons with incomes up to 275% of the federal poverty guidelines. Section 14 is from the Governor's Bill. This requires the use of modified adjusted gross income as the income method for most MA eligibility groups. Also establishes a standard 5% income disregard. Section 15, this is from the Governor's Bill, increases the MA income limit for children through age 18 to 275% of the federal poverty guidelines. And this section is related to some Minnesota Care income limit changes that are made later. The remaining changes in this section, you know, if you were looking at the bill, were already made in Chapter 1 when that was passed. So there'll be an author's amendment to just kind of clarify that. Section 25 is from House File 214. It requires healthcare delivery system demonstration projects to document how they consult with and how they address the needs of counties and local entities. Section 26, also from House File 214, this allows the department to approve contracting on a single plan basis with county-based purchasing plans to serve MA enrollees who are not disabled, but it doesn't require this. Sections 27 to pretty much the end of the bill, Section 62, make changes to the Minnesota Care Program. Most of these provisions are from the Governor's Bill, and I'll outline some of the main differences from House File 214, the first engrossment. First, this bill adopts the Governor's position on Minnesota Care providing coverage for persons with incomes between 133 and 200% of the federal poverty guidelines. The bill also uses the current Minnesota Care benefit set rather than sort of a modified MA benefit set, which was in House File 214. The bill retains the 10% coinsurance requirement for inpatient hospital costs. And I should mention that both the governor's bill and House File 214 eliminated the $10,000 annual inpatient limit and the 4-month and 18-month insurance barriers for Minnesota Care. And then finally, the bill retains Minnesota Care premiums. House File 214 had eliminated premiums from 2015 on. This article also contains a number of provisions from House File 214. These include sections 31 and 32. These basically define participating entities, and it allows these participating entities to offer services under Minnesota Care beginning in 2015. Section 33 assigns various duties to the commissioner related to negotiating an agreement with the federal government for a basic health plan. Section 33 assigns duties to the commissioner. I'm sorry, let me go back. Sections 31 and 32 basically allow participating entities to provide services to the basic health plan. Section 33 sets criteria for the commissioner to negotiate with the federal government for getting funding for a basic health plan. Section 38, this sets a loss ratio requirement for Minnesota Care of 85%, and this is the requirement used under the ACA for large groups. Sections 47 and 48 basically pick up some of the ACA requirements and add those to the Minnesota Care application process. Section 56 sets requirements for providing coverage to enrollees through contracts with participating entities. This section also contains some language dealing with coordination with local services and local public health goals. Section 59 is a study of the Healthcare Access Fund solvency and funding. And Section 60, this is a new provision, this is not in House File 214, requires a study of whether a Minnesota-based risk adjustment system would be more effective than one conducted by federal agencies. And that concludes the overview of the Article 1.
Members, any questions? Representative Huntley.
Well, Madam Chair and members, just on his last point, the task force that set up the Health Exchange Task Force recommended that we not do our own risk adjustment, that we use the federal one, which is what's in Section 60. And, just felt that given the timelines that we had, it would be too difficult for the state to do the risk adjustment.
And Section 62 are repealers, and could you just clarify again
sure.
what those were?
Madam Chair, those are repealers related to the Minnesota Care program. It eliminates a lot of the requirements that don't fit with Minnesota Care being a basic health plan.
Okay. Ms. Loeffler?
Just a quick follow-up question to Representative Chair Hartley. The question on the risk adjustment system, does that mean that our current risk adjustment system that we've been using wouldn't meet the federal requirements, so we couldn't just continue on with, you know, I mean, it's not as big as some envision, but do you know if that was one of the reasons to recommend the federal one versus a state enhanced one?
Well, Representative Huntley.
Madam Chair and Representative Loeffler, I'm just trying to recollect this, but we do have some risk adjustment, but it's not very extensive. And the health plans have been doing their own within their own system. And it was my understanding that the task force just felt that, given the timelines, that it was too complicated for us. And the feds will do it, and then we can come back in a year if we decide we have a better way to do it and do our own risk adjustment. And I think this is just basically a study.
Thank you.
and Representative Abler.
Well, thank you. There's a lot of decisions that were made in this Minnesota Care expansion about stop at 200 or go to 275 and the benefit choices. Is there a fiscal note about the impacts plus or minus of those different decisions? I remember when we went through that in our basic health plan meetings that there was a ton of choices to be made. And, you know, you've made choices. I'm just curious, if not for today, but is there a list of those pricings of the different options that you chose?
Representative Motley?
Madam Chair and Representative Abler, I'm sure there is some pricing, and I'm sure Mr. Berg has seen them, but the commissioner and the governor's people wanted to go from 130. We can argue over the 133 versus 138, to 200%, and I think that's currently what's in this bill. Whether a year from now, when we're doing the basic health plan, we want to change that and go a little higher, I think is something we'll have to discuss next summer or this summer.
Mr. Berg, did you have anything else, or did that?
Madam Chair, Representative Abler, just to say that the pieces that look at pricing this initiative, there's, I guess I would say three. There's a fiscal analysis, like a fiscal note that Department of Human Services did on the governor's proposal. There's the numbers that are represent the governor's proposal in the spreadsheet, which are the same as ours. And then there was a fiscal note on Representative Murphy's bill at a prior stage, which indicated about, summarized, $100 million additional costs, which was the effect of not having premiums in the bill. So, I mean, that's really the only decision that's gone on that's different than the governor's is for a while there were no premiums. Now the premiums are back in.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Representative.
And so the decision to keep the Minnesota Care benefits, that, except for the hospital part, is that a cheaper decision or a more expensive decision than having the MA benefits?
Representative Huntley.
So those are the kind of questions I'm just wondering about choices we've made. And so
I don't know offhand.
Okay, and just to help understand what the proposal is, so it goes to 200 for, we preserve Minnesota Care from 138 to 200, and then families, and so some people are at 275, which is children, or is it families too?
Children, and Madam Chair, and they are now eligible for MA, so that's where they're going to be.
Up to 275.
Representative Abler?
Okay. Thanks.
All right, I'll stop. I think we're done with Article 1. Are there other? Okay, so thank you, Mr. Chen.
I'm sure.
Representative Huntley.
The idea is that everybody else that hasn't been shifted into medical assistance or into the new Minnesota Care that is above 200% of poverty will move into the exchange and get their coverage there. And for some of us, that's a bit of a problem for the people at the lower end of that, maybe 200 to 225. Because in the exchange, they're going to have the bronze plan, the silver plan, and so on. And I think the bronze plan is fine if you're 25 years old and making $100,000 a year. If you're just at 201% of poverty and you have a family and you're making $25,000 a year, you don't want to be in the bronze plan because the out-of-pocket is way too
astronomical.
Yeah. So we're going to have to deal with that, but we'll deal with that next year.
Thank you.
Thank you, and I think we're ready for Article 2.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Article 2 in the bill language begins on page 42, line 7, and this is the Governor's Initiative on Reform 2020. Nothing in this article has changed from what was in the Governor's bill. So everything that Assistant Commissioner Coleman went over last week is contained in this. Some of the initiatives in here relate to enhancing vulnerable adult protection, critical access study and service development, independent and community living supports added to alternative care and the elderly waiver, and the creation of the community first services and supports.
And for the record, this is Danielle Pinelli that's speaking.
Madam Chair, if there aren't any questions on Article 2, I'll move on to Article 3. This is the payment methodologies for home and community-based services.
Can you give us a page number, please?
It begins on page 109, line 4.
Page 22 of the booklet.
Madam Chair and members, the language that's contained in Article 3 right now is the language that was introduced as House File 1448, which Representative Norton is carrying. It hasn't changed since it was introduced. My understanding is that negotiations between DHS and the providers are ongoing and that there will be an amendment to this language for markup on Friday.
That's my intent. Thank you. So members, you know, I don't know that we want to spend a lot of time on this particular section until we get the amendment before you at the end of the week, because I think we've covered it in committee when the bill was brought forward, and we know there's a lot of concerns, and they continue to come in.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Abler, Representative Abler.
I also want to commend you for, like, reorienting the table relative to the room. This is a much healthier way to run a Senate hearing. The chair in the middle, it's nice to have the House impose its will upon the Senate. I'm liking that.
Thank you for that.
This is good. I mean, it's better than the poobah method where they're up on the front surveying the long family. Anyway.
Representative Abler, you've never served on rules, then.
Oh, is that right?
That's where House Rules meets, sir.
That's great. When do you think you're going to decide what that amendment's going to say in concept?
I wish I could say it was completely up to me, but it's not. The sides are both talking. The biggest issue in this particular section of law right now is a continued uncertainty about the payment and whether they'll be appropriate or not. So there's an uncertainty there, but the biggest question is, when will it roll out? And just for, I think, folks' knowledge, the department had been directed to get something done and rolled out ASAP, and I think they feel they've pushed the limit of that and want it to start rolling out immediately. The providers are nervous, understandably so, with the new rate system, and so they would like it to roll out so that there are no changes the first year, but the changes are implemented slowly. The department had recommended 1% starting this year, and the advocates would like it to be 0%, 0%, and I'm hoping someplace in the middle we'll come to agreement so that we have an opportunity to consider it a pilot maybe that first year and play it out on paper before it actually happens, so there's a comfort level with the providers. So I think we're still in that negotiation trying to agree with what we bring forward this weekend, knowing that we can continue to work up until the very last day of session and always come back in the future if it's not quite right. But we'd rather not do that if we don't have to. Representative Abler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just for the sake of those members who aren't part of those negotiations, the original bill the department brought last year was plus or minus 5%, which would have been horrendous for certain providers and an unwarranted win for those who were the plus fives. And the 0-0, which I like, means you implement it and then you actually figure out the rates because the department doesn't know the rates. But the 1 is a plus or minus 1 variance. That's what that means. And the binary code I suggested before was that the 0-0-1-1-1 was to have 2 years of implementation where they actually realize what they're paying people and then actually clean it up so it actually works. And then in the third year, they would be in a certain plus or minus one, and start adding the new people in at the new rates. And I know you've been working on this, and you know I've been working on it with the same enthusiasm toward the same end of a good bill that doesn't hurt people. So thank you for your work on that, Madam Chair.
And thank you, Representative Abler. Okay, Ms. Pinelli?
Madam Chair, I believe Ms. Aves is going to continue with Article 4.
All right, thank you. Ms. Aves, and a page number would be helpful because I'm having trouble. I got it. Page 125 of the document. And I don't know on the research summary, but page 24.
Madam Chair and members, I'm going to walk you through the chemical and mental health article.
Article 4.
Sections 1 to 5 are interrelated. They allow the commissioner to spend money from the state-operated services account for transition services for individuals leaving Anoka and St. Peter. This is these are governor's provisions. Section 6 is House File 455, Representative Schoen's Chemical Health Navigation Program. Section 7, 10, and 12 are governor's provisions related to the timely discharge of individuals from St. Peter and Anoka. It provides for additional waivers and resources to accomplish this. Sections 8 and 9 are governor's provisions related to children's mental health, allowing family psychoeducation services and mental health clinical care coordination to be covered by medical assistance. Section 11 is a governor's provision allowing intensive treatment in foster care. And Section 13 adjusts the mental health payment rate, the MA payment rate for mental health services, again, a governor's provision.
Questions from any of the members?
Okay. I'm going to continue with Article 5. That begins on page 141 of the language. I don't have the page number for the summary.
28.
This is the Department of Human Services Program Integrity article. Sections 1 through 3 are governor's language. They're interrelated. They expand the commissioner's access to data for purposes of conducting background studies. There were two sections in the spreadsheet this morning related to background studies that had zeros. The reason that they're in there is because we need the language for federal funding. So there is money attached to it. It's just not state money. Sections 4 through 9 are governor's provisions. They are fraud prevention activities related to MA providers, vendors, and PCA provider organizations. That is the quick summary of that article, all governor's provisions.
All right. Any questions, anyone?
Madam Chair.
Representative
Just
Abel.
A process question. I carried the department bill about some other integrity things, and these were carried in the budget bill because they were tied to money. And there's this and a number of other things I don't think have actually been discussed in the committee per se. And so now they're in the omnibus without a lot of testimony. And so after my behavior 2 years ago, I'm not going to spend much time discussing process. So, but I'm just concerned about content.
I'm glad to hear that, Representative.
I've never spent much time discussing it. My colleagues differ on that topic sometimes. Mm-hmm. But anyway, but I hope that the public is paying attention to these. And if there's concerns about this, where they impact somebody, I hope that they talk to myself and all the members of the committee real soon and along the process way, because there's not been a lot of sunshine on some of these things, and I think particularly the child care licensing piece is the one that I think has had the least amount of exposure and the most amount of controversy. So just the public, I hope you're listening, so help us do a good bill here. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Huntley.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Abler, I think you're correct, and there is a lot of policy in this bill that has not really been gone through the policy committee. And I think that's a bit of a problem. Ultimately, we may have, or Representative Liebling may have a hearing later on to just look at some of the policy that's in this bill and have hearings on that.
Representative Abler, to the point that you made regarding the child care issues, if you'll notice, those really aren't in this bill. We did take some testimony and we did hear the governor's proposal, but they are not in this bill. And so I know I've received emails already this morning for people wanting to come in and testify, and yet I don't think they realize with the delete all amendment, most of that is not in here. And I don't know if that'll be good news to people or bad news, but please take some time to look through this so that you can answer those questions, because I've gotten emails already this afternoon about that.
And Madam Chair, and to yourself and to the author of the bill, thank you.
There's always amendments on Friday, Representative Abler, so there's still time.
What is to be doing?
Okay. Mr. Chen, it looks like you're back to do Section 6.
Right. Madam Chair, this is Article 6, health care, beginning on page 29 of the summary and page 151 of the bill. Sections 1 through 3 deal with the hospital surcharge. Section 1 raises the surcharge to 2.68%. Section 2 would allow the commissioner to retrospectively reduce rates to avoid the loss of a federal match if the Medicare upper payment limit is exceeded. And then Section 3 is an increase in hospital payments by 30%. Section 4 is Representative Loeffler's House Bill 869. This allows MA payment for inpatient hospital services provided to inmates. Section 5 is the governor's proposal. This provides ongoing coverage under the Emergency Medical Assistance Program for dialysis and chemotherapy. Under current law, this coverage would expire June 30th of 2013. Section 6 is your bill, House File 176, dealing with MA dental coverage for adults to include house calls, behavioral management, sedation, and additional prophylaxis. Section 7 is a governor's proposal, reduces payment rates for drugs provided through the 340B drug discount program. Would also apply the state maximum allowable cost payment rate to drugs that are administered in an outpatient setting. Section 8 is the governor's proposal. This provides payment for electronic tablets as durable medical equipment. Section 9 is also from the governor's bill. It establishes a rebate program for diabetic testing supplies. Sections 10 and 11 is a governor's proposal. It would eliminate MA payments for vaccines that are available at no cost to the provider. Sections 12 and 13 deal with the Hennepin Health demonstration project for Medicaid. Both of these bills are Representative Loeffler's, House File 213, House File 766. Section 12 allows the project to waive co-payments. Section 13 would allow the project to expand the number and type of enrollees. Section 14 is a governor's proposal dealing with the Merck program, and it increases the amount of money transferred from MA capitation rates to Merck from 36.7 to 49.5 million. Section 15 increases payment for MA primary care services to the Medicare rate. This is a governor's proposal. And finally, Section 16 increases payment rates by 20% for family planning services provided by community clinics. And this is the governor's proposal. And that concludes the overview of Article 6.
Members, questions on Article 6? Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and maybe for Mr. Chun. On Article or Section 13 about the enrollment cap of 7,000 that Hennepin Health had, is that just no limit, then they can do what makes sense for them, or is there some other cap?
Madam Chair, Representative Abler, it simply eliminates the 7,000 enrollment cap, so in theory it could be, you know, quite a bit higher than that.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Loeffler, did you comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Abler. It requires the Department of Human Services to approve it, though it's a negotiation with the department.
Yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions about Article 6? Okay, I think we'll move on to Article 7. Ms. Pinelli?
Madam Chair and members, Article 7 is the continuing care article. The language in the delete all starts on page 169, line 4, and the language in the summary starts on page 32. Sections 1, 5, 7, 14, and 16 are all a modification of the governor's waiver management initiative. These are all the no-cost items that were included in that initiative. Section 2 is the ICFDD license surcharge. Later on in this article, Section 19 is related to this. It's the rate increase that goes along with the surcharge for the ICFDD facilities. Section 3 is related to pre-admission screening of individuals under 65 years of age. This was a governor's initiative. Section 4 is related to payment for long-term care consultation services. That was also a governor's initiative. Section 8 is the governor's initiative on autism early intensive intervention benefits. Section 9 is a governor's initiative suspending the nursing facility property-related payment rate adjustments. Section 10 is a modification of Representative Fritz's House File 886 that provides a COLA increase for nursing homes. Sections 11, 12, and 13 were all governor's initiatives related to nursing homes. Section 17 is part of House File 1395. This is modifying home and community-based settings for people with disabilities. Section 20 is a modification of House File 777 that provides a COLA increase for ICFDD facilities. Section 21 is House File 524, Representative Fisher's bill that modified it's a reduction of rates for congregate living for individuals with low needs. Section 22 is another section from House File 1395 that provides for recommendations for concentration limits on home and community-based settings. Section 23 is another modification of a section from House File 777 that provides rate and grant increases for certain continuing care providers. And then Section 24 is a repealer. This was a governor's recommendation, and it was also in House File 710. It just repeals the 1.67% rate reductions.
All right, so that's Article 7. Anyone have any questions? Representative Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, just so we're looking at giving the nursing homes a COLA increase, correct? But aren't we taking something away from them in terms of property credit or whatever?
Mr. Berg, would you like to answer that?
Madam Chair, Representative Grunhagen, there is an item in the governor's budget that suspends a property rate adjustment that they would get, which does save money for the state. I can't tell you how much how that applies to an individual nursing home. But
so Representative Grunhagen?
Oh, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Is the nursing home actually going to come out ahead, do you think?
Mr. Berg.
Madam Chair, Representative Grunhagen, I don't know how to answer that. I think it probably will depend on the individual home, but I don't know on the property rate adjustment how much that applies to each individual home. I would have to check with the MMB or DHS on that issue.
Representative Grunhagen, did you...
Well, I was just going to, yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, it just shows in 14-15, I think, a total of $17 million savings. Am I reading that correctly? Yeah, $17,303,000. I'm just wondering how much the COLA increases their cost. I mean, just as an industry as a whole.
Madam Chair, Representative Grunhagen, I think you have to remember that the rate adjustment you're looking at is an increase, which it doesn't happen. So, I mean, part of it is the COLA is in addition to what they're currently getting. The rate adjustment is coming off of what they would get. So, there's a little difference there.
So, if I'm understanding this correctly, there should be an increase.
Madam Chair, there definitely will be an increase to what they are receiving now. It may not be as high an increase as if we did not also have an increase related to the property rate. But how that applies to an individual nursing home, I don't know.
So Representative Fritz.
Madam Chair, no, it's never enough. We couldn't possibly get there. We can't get there on this earth. However, that's why 75% of the 2% is encumbered for wages. These are for the wages of the workers in the nursing home.
Okay, thanks.
I think that's good clarification. Any other questions? Representative Abler.
Oh, Madam Chair, just to help people don't have a spreadsheet in front of them. The cost of the COLA in the first biennium is $14,237,000, and in the second biennium is $15,160,000. And then the reduction in the alternative payment system operating rate is $17 million in the first biennium, which is about a $3 million reduction in what they would have gotten. And then, but in L-biennium, it's $46 million reduction, just so you know. I have a different question, Madam Chair.
Representative Abler?
So the forecasted, the restoring the low rate to the mental health population, that's actually something that I mentioned this morning. It was we didn't realize that how the analysis system was skewed against mental illness in those low needs, and some of the people counted as low needs were actually pretty darn high needs. But there weren't enough questions on the mental illness questions. So in the in Article 21, where you add back that, which I think is a good thing to do, is that a partial carve out of that group? That's not all the low needs. It's just the low needs of the mental illness piece that were under evaluated. Is that right, Ms. Connelly?
Madam Chair and Representative Abler, yes, that's my understanding, is that it's just a carve out for that specific population with mental illness.
And Madam Chair, would that be like half of the people that were reduced, do you think? Or nobody knows that. Okay. Never mind. So
well, I guess someone, there was some methodology when the fiscal note was drafted, but I don't know what that is. Mr. Berg, do you know?
Madam Chair, Representative Abler, I don't know off the top of my head. I can look back at the fiscal note, but that will likely, I think, only look at how many people they think would fall under this, how many homes would get certified, how many would fall under it. Yeah. Now, how many are left that got cut that didn't, I don't think is in there, but I can check with the department and look back at a previous fiscal note and see how many were cut originally.
And Madam Chair, because there were a lot of people on the caddy waiver living in independent settings, and had we taken away, if they got too low, they'd be out, and then they'd be back in at a much higher price place. So thank you for working on this.
Absolutely. And Representative Huntley, did you have some comments?
Just a comment. If you would go to page 4 of the spreadsheet, as was said, the nursing homes get $14,237,000 over what they're getting right now. And 75% of that has to go to their employees. But if you go down to the next item on that page, it's the basically the long-term care providers, and which is a more expensive area, and they're getting $65 million additional dollars in the first biennium. And again, this is for primarily for nurses' aides and those kind of people that provide those services, although nurses and RNs and whatever will also get part of that increase.
Thank you, Representative Huntley, for clarifying that. I don't see any other questions, so if we want to go on to Article 8, the waiver provider standard.
Madam Chair and members, Article 8 is the waiver provider standards. The language in the delete all begins on page 197, line 20, and the language in the summary begins on page 36. This language is the same as what was in the governor's original initiative on waiver provider standards. This modifies primarily chapters 245A and the new chapter 245D that create uniform statewide standards for the waiver providers, and this is related to federal compliance.
Representative Abler.
Madam Chair, do you have an amendment for this one too, or is this is someone working on this in a specific way? Do you know?
I don't know at this time, Representative Abler.
Madam Chair, I know that they're in negotiations and the same discussion type as is on the other, so then maybe I'll have an amendment to this section for Friday. So I think it's something that we want to be interested in as a group, frankly, I really admire the department for their intent and how hard they work, but sometimes it's our role to move them along and understand the needs of the people that we serve across our state, and keep encouraging them to do the right thing in a way that is the right timeliness and the right level of cost. So, did I say it nice, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Abler.
Don't see anyone else? Oh, Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll just add that it's a bipartisan concern that this continue to get worked on, and that it has major implications for our whole service system, and there's some inequities in some of the parts of the proposal, but particularly licensing fees and some of the expectations for the smaller providers and their capability to step up to what's expected is, I think, a question.
Thank you for that, Representative Loeffler, and to both of you and the other members of the committee. I mean, I have forwarded all the concerns. I've talked with, I think, Inspector General Gerber was talking about this when he was testifying. We raised those issues. I talked to him after, and I have since forwarded two different emails with similar but slightly different concerns about this section of the bill, and he acknowledged he received them. I don't know if an amendment is coming forward yet, so you might want to contact his office. I don't know if he's generating one on my behalf or if he could use some encouragement. So,
thank you.
Thank you. Continue.
Madam Chair, Article 9 is Waiver Provider Standards Technical Changes. The language in the delete all starts on page 294, line 16, and in the summary it's page 51. And these are all really technical cross-reference changes related to what was just discussed in Article 8.
Questions, members? Okay. Is someone else going to take over? All right. Ms. Aves? Oops. Okay.
Madam Chair and members, Article 10 is the miscellaneous article in the Delete Everything Amendment. It begins on page 312. Section 1 of this article is Representative Moran's House File 107 that raises the absent day limit. Sections 2 and 7 are from Representative Schoen's House File 1002. It allows the health-related licensing boards to conduct criminal background checks on applicants. Section 3 is a governor's provision related to an increase in the county portion for the cost of care at regional treatment centers and state nursing homes. Section 4 is Representative Moran's House File 310, the Cultural and Ethnic Communities Leadership Council. Section 5 is the language striking the supplementary rate that was negotiated with Teen Challenge. Section 6 is a governor's provision eliminating the EBT transaction reimbursement for retailers accepting EBT SNAP transactions. And Section 8 is a repealer. It's the repeal of the MPIP family cap. It's Representative Fritz's House File 256, and I believe Representative Moran also carried the same language in House File 1142.
Any questions to Article 10? Article 11 up next. Looks like Ms. Cleveland.
Madam Chair, members,
welcome.
Emily Cleveland with House Research. Article 11 starts in the bill on, or in the delete everything on page 320. This is the governor's proposal for modifying regulation of home care providers, and it's the same as the language that we discussed last week one evening. So there's no changes there. Article 12.
Madam Chair.
Representative Abler.
So negotiations are proceeding under this as well, and I think in a very favorable way. So I don't know if someone's going to make an amendment forward, or I would hope there'd be an amendment to this section based upon the status of negotiations. And I can track that or somebody else, but this is a similarly fraught with peril section about costs and all that. But it's going well with the negotiations. So thank you.
Thank you for that. Ms. Cleveland?
Madam Chair, members, Article 12 is the Health Department bill, and it starts on page 380 in the Delete Everything. Section 1 is a transfer of $1 million each year from the Healthcare Access Fund to the Merck Fund. Section 2 is the HMO net worth limit. It limits capital reserves to 25% of the sum of all expenses that the HMO incurs during the most recent year. It requires the Commissioner of Health with the Commissioners of Human Services and Commerce to determine the proportion of the reserves that are attributable to the gains in the state's healthcare public health care programs. And then it requires the HMOs to place excess capital reserves into special restricted accounts and requires that these funds are spent down as specified in the language. Section 3 establishes a $1 million grant under the Merck program for family medicine residency programs located outside of the 7-county metro area. Section 4 adds certain hospitals and affiliated specialty clinics whose inpatients are mostly under the age of 21 to the list of essential community providers. This provision was in a bill, House File 779, that moved through the committee. Section 5 and 6 are from the governor's bill related to geothermal heat exchangers. Section 7 is also from the governor's bill. That's changes to the diagnostic lab services. Section 8 is from the governor's bill, and that is changes to the newborn screening program fee, increases the fee. Sections 9 through 19 are from the governor's proposal. This was an amendment that the committee considered last week related to changes for the Office of Vital Records, which is the birth and death records. So then the next section is Section 20, 21, and 22 are from the Liebling bill, which relates to designating certain hospitals at different levels of as a stroke center or stroke hospital. Section 23 is from the governor's proposal related to health facilities, construction plan, submission, and fees. Section 24 is from the governor's proposal, and that is extending expiration of the existing Newborn Screening Advisory Committee. Sections 25 through 30 they're from the governor's bill, and they are related to environmental lab accreditation. Section 31 is from the governor's bill, and this is permitting administrative penalty orders for violations of Lead Poisoning Prevention Act. Section 32 is from the governor's bill, and that's the SHIP statewide health improvement program changes. Sections 33 through 83 of the bill are all the mortuary science changes from the governor's bill. Primarily these are related to the alkaline hydrolysis licensing and regulation, and then it's a lot of sections because it adds the phrase alkaline hydrolysis to all the existing regulations. Also included in there is the regulation related to prep rooms in the branch funeral establishments. That's all from the governor's bill. Then sections 84, 85, and 86 are also related to the vital records. That was the change from the governor's proposal with the amendment that the committee adopted last week. Section 87 is from a Liebling bill. This is modifications to the existing Minnesota Task Force on Prematurity. Sections 88 and 89 are from an Atkins bill related to the staffing plan disclosure. This is the study of the nurse staffing levels. Section 90 and 91 are from the governor's bill. That's the revisor's instruction and the repealers, and all of the repealers are also from the governor's bill.
Members, that's Article 12. Anyone have questions? Representative Groom-Hagan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just on Section 2 of Article 12, we're back to those HMO surpluses or how much reserves. There you go, reserves. Yeah, I don't know what I call them, surplus. Anyway, it doesn't apply to private reserves, correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Grunhagen, my understanding of the way that DHS is working the analysis on this is that they are looking at numbers based off the portion of reserves that would be attributable to public programs. And that is the issue that's being dealt with there.
That's your understanding.
I can't say more. They're still working on their analysis, so I don't have anything to pass out to you, but that is my understanding of how they're doing it. Only the portion of the reserves that they believe can be shown to be from public programs.
I'm sorry. Representative Huntley wanted to follow up.
Madam Chair and Representative Grunhagen, in addition to, it depends on which HMO you're talking about. Blue Cross Blue Shield has a very high percentage of their reserves for their HMOs came from public programs. Other HMOs, I think they're all more than 50%, but from public programs. But there is language in here that says if whatever percentage of their reserves that can be attributed to private sector, not public programs, that when as they spend down their reserves, that money has to go back to those private companies that bought that insurance, or if it were individuals, it has to go back to those individuals that bought that
insurance. So, Representative Grunhagen.
So they'd actually refund those back above that cap?
Madam Chair,
Representative
Grunhagen, it's not clear to me, and I'd have to ask the staff that whether that goes into future reductions or whether it goes back to those that are already paid in.
Ms. Cleveland?
Madam Chair and Representative Grunhagen, on page 381 and 82 is the language. And so the first part is the commissioners will determine through a process set out here in the language which portion is from the state public program. And then the second, that goes into one special account of each HMO. And then the second part, which is not attributable, which would be the part for the private business, goes into a separate account, and it's spent down according to clause 2 here on page 382. Mm-hmm. And they need to present a plan for how they're going to spend it down in the ways that Representative Huntley described. And then the commissioner would approve the plan that it's meeting this requirement.
Madam Chair, yeah, they're already under a mandate on the state, though, to return, I think it's 85 cents of the dollar back to the doctors and hospitals already they have to in terms of their rates. So would this conflict with that current state mandate? Because they're already under, I think we're one of the first states to start the mandate where so much of the money can only be used for administrative and commissions. Now, the reason I remember that is they reduced my commissions by about 20%. I probably wouldn't have remembered it otherwise. When your commissions drop several thousand dollars. But anyway. But the point is, I just think their private business should be left alone. They already have a mandate on that. And, so I'm open to clarification on it, but that's just my initial thought.
Ms. Cleveland, did you have any comment you wanted to make?
Madam Chair and Representative Grunhagen, I can't really speak to how it would interact for each HMO, but this is talking about the excess reserves under this, so I'm not sure how that relates with the administrative costs.
Okay. Well, I'll maybe do some additional finding out here after the meeting. Just one additional question.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. The other thing I didn't see in here is under the competitive bidding process we've had in the metro area, according to published reports, we've saved about $1 billion for taxpayers. Is that correct?
Mr. Burr?
Madam Chair, Representative Grunhagen, I think I've seen something that says that, that people tend to kind of round up on the we've saved this amount, but we have saved significant funds under the competitive bidding process. I can't tell you the exact number, but it's substantial.
Okay. Madam Chair, is there any plans to expand that beyond the metro area? In the bill, I just didn't see that.
Madam Chair, Representative Grunhagen, we are doing competitive bidding, I believe, across the state. Mr. Barsh is shaking his head no, that it's a. I think we have an issue of whether there's enough service in rural areas to make sure that there is actual competition?
Their plan is to expansion of his act.
Okay. What he said.
So I think, can someone repeat that for the record? Mr. Berg, would you?
Madam Chair, Representative Grunhagen, I'm conferring with Mr. Parsh in the audience. I guess it is just at the metro area, and he indicates there's some planning going to take that statewide. I'm thinking about it now. I think some of the complication is whether there's going to be enough HMOs to actually have competition in the bidding in some areas. They have to have.
And perhaps tomorrow and the next day, when we're actually taking testimony, we could the departments in the room listening, they could step to the mic tomorrow, or the next day, and address that, or one of the HMOs for that matter.
There isn't anything booked in the bill for savings relative to that going further, though.
Thank you, Mr. Berg, but that might be a nice idea.
Right, Madam Chair. Madam Chair.
I have Representative Mack, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just trying to understand this part of the bill a little bit, I guess I'm wondering, going forward, obviously, when we hear from the plans, and I'm sure we'll hear from them tomorrow or Thursday, but from year to year, their profits will, you know, shift, and they'll have swings in how they do. And I guess I'm just wondering, if the legislature sees that maybe some of these reserve accounts are higher than we'd like to see as a result of public programs, I mean, could the state end up underpaying or react to that and underpay? And I'm curious kind of the net effect of this, because if I'm not mistaken, that's against federal law to underpay the plans for the services they're providing, but trying to get at those reserves. I don't know if maybe we can hear from the plans from that, or Representative Huntley, if you have any thoughts on if that could be a natural occurrence, if the state sees this swing and seeing those reserves getting higher than we want, then go and underpay the plans because they have too much, and if it could just get us into an ugly cyclical situation going forward, I guess is my question.
Representative Huntley, I think you addressed a little bit that this is a system we've used before in the past, and maybe we have a history that we can fall upon.
Yeah.
Representative Huntley.
There's another portion of this bill that also affects what we're paying the health plans. But in this section, it's my understanding, Madam Chair, Representative Mack, that what we are doing is saying they have to reduce their reserves. We're going back to what we had in 2003. And some of us feel that their reserves have gotten higher than they need to be. But we are also required by federal law to pay them in an actuarially sound basis. And that's different from the reserves. We can't pay them less than what it costs to provide those services, or the feds won't approve those contracts.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Liebling?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to respond to remind members that we're having a hearing tomorrow that might address some of this or help clarify some of this for members. And again, we're going to try to cover a lot of material in a very short time, so I don't want to let anybody think we're going to have a ton of time for discussion, but it may clarify some of these issues because we're going to, I hope, go through some of the history of PMAP and talk about some of the audits that have been done, and we're trying very hard to set that up in a way that it'll be understandable to members who might not have a lot of background in this. So I just want to remind people about that, and that is now scheduled for 4 o'clock tomorrow.
Representative Lane.
Yes, in the past, before 2004, when we had caps on the reserves similar to this, as when we started the program, we started with a cap and continued it until 2004. There wasn't one experience, for instance, when I believe Medica went over the amount in their reserves for the cap, and they needed to give a premium rebate back to people that had been purchasers of the plan. In this situation, it's the state that is paying the premiums for in the public health program. So if they're over the cap, then we set the rates similar, just the same as we do now, and then they do the contribution to that payment, to those premiums, initially before we contribute our part, so that they are then paying towards the premium of the public health programs. And that way, they're reducing their reserves without violating the setting of the rates with the federal government.
Thank you for that clarification, and I think if we could just go on to Article 13, we're nearing the end here. Ms. Cleveland, do you have that?
Yes, Madam Chair and members. Article 13 is the Human Services Forecast Adjustments, and so I don't know if there's a spreadsheet on that or... and Article 14 is the Appropriations Article. The spreadsheet we went over in this morning is a reflection of that, and we'll, the author's amendment will include any changes that need to be to the language to match the spreadsheet. And then the Article 15 is the contingent appropriations article, which correlates with the shorter spreadsheet that we also saw this morning.
And that is the entire bill. And so, Representative Huntley, do you want, I think that was what we were hoping to accomplish today, and we have accomplished that. Are there any comments you want to make, and then wrap up?
Well, Madam Chair and members, you know, none of us read through this whole thing during this hearing, and there's a lot of material in there, and I'm personally more into the spreadsheet than any other part of this bill. But I think we all need to go to our offices and start thinking about this and talking to other people, and we will be hearing testimony, I believe, on Thursday?
Tomorrow.
And Thursday. And we'll certainly hear lots of complaints about various parts of this bill, and that may lead people to be able to make some amendments on Friday. And we had a number of discussions today about the department working with various groups to try to resolve differences, and I will say that I don't think I've ever seen in my 21 years here a time when the department seemed to be willing to negotiate with various provider groups and try to reach an agreement that they will come out. And some of those won't be ready by Friday, but the department will continue to negotiate with people as we go to Ways and Means and go to the House floor and go to Conference Committee. And I've been really impressed with particularly Mr. Kerber, I think, has done a phenomenal job of trying to improve the problems.
So, members, Representative Abler.
Can you just discuss the logistics and review the times?
Yep. I was just going to do that.
Okay, and just I know there's a 24-hour rule, I think, on amendments. And on those three areas that there's still late negotiations going on, do you think that there could be some flexibility on those? So, because I presume they'll be talking on the three areas, I'm just suggesting three makes sense. The your rate setting one, the 245D licenses, and the 144As or whatever, the Department of Health one. That if maybe there could be leave by the chair on, because those are going on, and you hate to waste a whole day of negotiations just to meet a deadline. So Mr. Chair, maybe I'll just ask if that could be considered as a late amendment that would be useful.
I would consider that, and if both parties come in and have agreed to that, both the department and whoever the providers are, then I think we would, it would be okay to do that. But for most people, you better have your amendments ahead of time, 24 hours, and particularly if it does not involve negotiations going on between the department and the...
Right.
And then find the money, too, right?
And members...
You also need to find the money.
Yeah, that's what I was going to remind everyone. Tomorrow at 10 a.m., we're meeting at our regular time in room 200. Hopefully, we won't be double-booked, and this time I think we'll stand our ground and force them out of the room.
You can't kill us this time.
And so I think, you know, part of what we have to do is listen very carefully to the testimony that comes forward in the next 2 days. And if we have to extend a committee hearing, if we're not getting through the testifiers, we can do that. There's some time set aside, I think, Wednesday evening. But we want to be done with the testimony and questions by Thursday. And then, again, as you're listening and hearing things, you know, consider your amendments and get those done by 10 a.m. with perhaps an exception one that I hear
Representative Hutley being willing to make, but the rest of those need to make deadline, and we're following the rules that we've established this year. So 10 a.m. on Thursday morning, and then at 10 a.m. on Friday, we will meet again, I'm assuming room 200 at this point. No?
I think it's...
No, let's not even say what we think it is. Let's just, you'll receive a notice, and it will be posted as to what room we have, and we'll double-check and make sure they that we're in there. And then we'll finish our amendments and have a bill completed on Friday. So I have Representative Abler and then anyone else? Okay.
Well, just a logistic thing. So is there a pretty good chance we'll come back tomorrow night, do you think?
It depends on how many people want to testify for the bill.
It could be a crowd.
It could be a crowd. And I will just say, you know, it's just been pointed out to me that one of the pieces of language change that's in our spreadsheet is not reflected in the bill, so we will have some additional searching. So please, as you go home and read through the bill, make certain that everything lines up because, you know, errors can, we need to catch them now.
Madam Chair. Representative. So is Thursday after session also a possibility for testimony?
I don't know yet.
At this time, the three scheduled
times. Just be regular. Okay. Yep, just the three scheduled times, and then Friday at 10, which is an additional meeting. So, members, that's it for today. Thank you all for your time and patience, and the meeting is adjourned.